good to see you all, and it is good to know that I am not the only one for whom daylight savings really caught them this morning. I snoozed and I snoozed and I snoozed, like something is not right here. Never really caught up to me. We had that yesterday. Rebecca and I, months ago, had bought tickets for the University of Tennessee, University of Kentucky basketball game in Knoxville. So we got up early yesterday on Saturday, got up pretty early and took off. And Addison is homesick and she's getting worse through the day. And then Tennessee loses and then daylight savings time. So thank goodness that day is over and this day is here, because Sunday is a day of celebration. I want to tell you that it means something to be first. I know this because I'm a school bus driver, and there are kids who like race to be the first one on the school bus. And it's not because the school bus is great. It is just, I'm like, why are you so anxious to get on there? There's plenty of seats. You can sit anywhere you want. But it means something to them to be first. You know, first man and woman, Adam and Eve, right? First king of Israel. Anybody know? Saul, later changed to Paul. Then there was it wasn't really, but it was King Saul, preached the first gospel message proclaiming Jesus as Messiah. Peter, that's right. First martyr to die on behalf of Christ. Stephen, that's right. First to discover, and we're going to get out of the Bible here, a little history. First to discover that the sun did not revolve around the earth. Galileo, we're going to go with Galileo. Other people debate it, but first European to discover the Americas. Columbus, maybe. Again, debatable. This one's not debatable. First president of the U.S. George Washington. Yes, first person on the moon. Neil Armstrong. First man to break the color barrier in baseball. Jackie Robinson, attaboy. First person to hear and proclaim the good news of the resurrection of Jesus. That's what I thought. Everyone knows about Peter's denial. Everybody knows about Judas's betrayal. Everyone knows about Thomas's doubt. All the important elements of the crucifixion and the resurrection story of Jesus. But the story of Mary Magdalene, not so much. This, despite Mary's dogged and unwavering devotion to Jesus throughout the Gospel of John. Now, Mary's steadfast faithfulness, that contrasts with basically all of the other disciples, the erratic behavior of the 12. The disciples that we know better, Peter, Andrew, James, and John, and all those guys, they were the ones who fell asleep in the Garden of Gethsemane. They were abandoned Jesus during his arrest. Some denied even knowing him. They locked themselves in a room out of fear from the reprisal by the Jewish leaders. But Mary Magdalene, what does she do? All she does is courageously follow Jesus, both to the cross and to the tomb. It all begins early on a Sunday morning. It's still largely dark out. Chill of the night air is still out there. The threat of violence still hangs heavy over the followers of Jesus. Nevertheless, one of the disciples dares to visit the tomb. Is it John, the disciple that Jesus loved? The one entrusted with the care of Jesus' own mother? Or maybe it's Peter, right? Preached the first gospel sermon. Maybe he's racked with guilt over his denial of Christ. Or James, who goes on to become the first apostle to be killed for Jesus' sake. Or maybe Thomas, battling his own doubt. Or Andrew, or Simon, or Thaddeus, or any of the other 12. No. It is, in fact, none other than our Mary Magdalene, who walks the dark road to the tomb. And it's she who is the first to discover that the stone is rolled away from the entrance. And she runs to inform the others, namely Peter and John, where they are gathered. And both Peter and John, they run to find out if what Mary has seen is true, because it doesn't make any sense to them. Both of them eventually see the empty tomb. First Peter and then John. They see the folded linens, and they see that were once wrapped around Jesus' body and nobody, right? And seeing the sight for themselves, we're told that John believed, but we're not told that he believed in the resurrection. We're just told that he believed for himself that Jesus was not there. I believe that Jesus is not here. I'm not sure what happened, but he believed that it was in fact an empty tomb. So not knowing what to make of it, Peter and John, they are probably numb, maybe baffled by the circumstances. They just go back. But one disciple, not content to remain safely locked up in the house, this disciple returns to the now empty tomb in mourning and in confusion. Now Mary stood outside the tomb crying. As she wept, she bent over to look into the tomb, and she saw two angels in white seated where Jesus' body had been, one at the head and the other at the foot. They asked her, "Woman, why are you crying?" "They have taken away my Lord," she said, "and I don't know where they put him." At this, she turned around and saw Jesus standing there. But she did not realize that it was Jesus. And he asked her, "Woman, why are you crying? Who is it that you are looking for?" Thinking that he was the gardener, she said, "Sir, if you've carried him away, just tell me where you put him, and I will get him." And Jesus said to her, "Mary." She turned toward him and cried out in Aramaic, "Rabboni," which means teacher. Jesus said, "Do not hold on to me, for I have not yet ascended to the Father. Go instead to my brothers and tell them, I am ascending to my Father and to your Father, to my God and to your God." Mary Magdalene went to the disciples with the news, "I have seen the Lord." And she told them that he had said these things to her. Now, before we get too much deeper, a reminder that John is a little bit of a poet among the gospel writers. He's a little bit of a poet. So the words that John uses, he chooses really carefully. Often, John intones multiple levels of meaning with one word. So it's a very important word in this story, and it's a simple word in English. The word is turn. Now, from the very beginning of John's gospel, he's been intent on revealing to us the glory of Jesus as the Christ. That's what he's trying to show us. So his first miracle, turning the water into wine at the wedding in Cana. That revealed Jesus' glory. All the signs and the teachings and the miracles of Jesus revealing God's saving glory, a glory which ultimately reaches its climax on the cross, where Jesus glorifies God by revealing the full extent of God's love for the world and bringing life through death. Now, the question that naturally accompanies this revelation of this glory is, how are people going to respond to it? Once God just opens up the gates and shows them who he is and what he wants, what are people going to do? And in John 6, verse 66, we're told that the crowds rejected it, that they turned away from following Jesus. That's the wording. They turned away. But the word turn, it's not just about a physical posture. It's not just about what you're physically doing. It's a spiritual posture. It's what's going on inside, not just what's going on with your body, but what's going on the inside. So in our text this morning, we see Mary turning toward Jesus, not once, but twice. So she turned toward him, not knowing who he was, thinking he was a gardener, right? And she turned towards him. But then again, later on, it says she turned towards him again. So Mary Magdalene's turning is not just about what she did with her shoulders or her hips or on the outside. It is what she did on the inside. She turned from grief and mourning and sorrow from death to the joy and the hope of the resurrection. She doesn't just turn towards the light and glory of God. She is like latching onto it fiercely. Of all those who followed Jesus in his life, only Mary is at the tomb to receive this message. Peter and John, they came, they looked around, they gave up, they left. No appearance from Jesus. Jesus could have told anybody, by the way. I mean, think about this. This is the Son of God. He could have revealed his resurrection to anyone in any circumstances. Why didn't Jesus appear to Peter? Or to the beloved disciple, to John? Why not tell them? Why not show them? They would be believed. Women couldn't even, their word wasn't valid in court. Like, it's not a valid testimony. You had to have multiple witnesses, and women didn't even count. But it seems like Jesus wanted to entrust this good news, this miracle, fresh and fragile as it is, to the most recipient disciple possible. And the most faithful disciple in this case was Mary Magdalene. Something draws her to the tomb on the early that Sunday morning. And she goes and she reports that to the disciples. But even after that, something draws her back. So she goes back. Even after Peter and the beloved disciple John leave, something keeps her there longer. There's no way that she could have known what was coming. It's clear that she's surprised every step along this way. But even though she doesn't have like this insider knowledge, there was something she couldn't explain about the grave. And so Mary's encounter with the angels and with Jesus were these divinely orchestrated steps. It is not an accident that Mary happens to be there when Jesus shows up. Yesterday, when we went to the game, Rebecca was telling me, and some of y'all may know Kiki from, you know, J&G. It was like, Kiki and their son is going to UT and they're going to be at this game today. And we were like, okay. So we walk in and it has like been pouring rain. We are drenched. We are walking around like drowned rats. And we're trying to make it to our seats. And we came in one door and then we followed the signs all the way back around to that same door, I think. We walked all the way around. But as we get back around to this last sort of entrance area, in the door walks Kiki. I mean, there's tens of thousands of people there. And in the door walks Kiki right as we get there. And I'm like, what a coincidence, you know, that we bump into the one person we know is going to be here. This is not that. This is not like Mary just happened to be there when Jesus was like, oh, I didn't know you were going to be here, right? This is not a chance encounter. This is divinely orchestrated. He is giving Mary this role, the task of telling the good news. She's chosen ahead of John. She's chosen ahead of Peter and Andrew and Simon and all the rest of the 12. She was chosen for this. Now, in the Gospel of Luke, that might mean something different. Let me tell you why. The way that the writers of the Gospels tell their stories, they all have interests. Like they arrange them according to their interests. One of the interests in Luke is demonstrating the social justice of the gospel. So Luke goes out of his way to tell the stories about how Jesus treated women or the poor or those who didn't count in society. Luke does that repeatedly. John, not so much. He has not really shown that inclination anywhere in his gospel. So let me be clear about this. I don't think it's insignificant that Jesus chose a woman to be the bringer of good news. But I don't think she was chosen because she was a woman. Rather, based on the evidence in John's gospel, I think Mary Magdalene was chosen because she was the one person who was the most faithful. Mary was the one who was faithful to Jesus throughout his ministry, throughout his crucifixion, throughout his resurrection. No one else was. Jesus doesn't dole out responsibilities in his kingdom based on what family you come from, how much money you have, your charisma, your race, your gender, or any of the other things that the world cares about. Jesus is only concerned with our faithfulness. So he gives Mary this responsibility because she is the most faithful. Who, above everyone else, can be entrusted with the good news that Jesus has risen from the grave? It is Mary, because he knows the character of Mary, knows she will be faithful in carrying this good news out. So the question for us this morning isn't whether this is about men's roles or women's roles or any of that. The question that we have to ask ourselves this morning is, have we been faithful to be received roles at all? That's the question for men, for women, for kids, for young, for old. The question isn't what role do we get. The question is, have we been faithful so that we might receive these roles? Because faithfulness is what counts in the kingdom. Above everything else, it is not how long you have been a disciple, how steeped your family is in Christianity. It is, have you and are you being faithful? And that is a hard question to answer on any given day. Because some days I feel like I'm more faithful than others. My faithfulness is more like Peter's and less like Mary's. More like John's and less like Mary's. But the call that he places on us today is that we might have this steadfast faithfulness so that we, like Mary, can be the bringers of good news. It is when people see our character and our dedication and our love and our genuineness day after day after day after day after day at work, at home, in the community, when we give of ourselves and give of ourselves and give of ourselves over and over, and that is a loud shout of faithfulness to God and good news to offer. So my prayer for you, my prayer for us as a congregation, is that we might be faithful. Not perfect. Mary Magdalene would be the first to tell you she did not live a perfect life. It's not about perfection. It's about steadfast faithfulness. May we be steadfastly faithful so that the world may hear the good news of the resurrection of our Lord Jesus Christ as seen, evidenced in our lives. And if we can pray for you this morning, encourage you, lift you up, we want to do that. Won't you come now as we stand and as we sing?